Following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be
This is a Milk and Seed audio production, where entertainment is always free.
Time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
Welcome back to the Swag Cast. This is Bill Holwick. Hope you're enjoying the recent foray into fantasy, so we'll just continue on with the travels of Ulysses from the General Mills Radio Adventure Theater, as well as the Blob from the Mysterious Traveler, and more barbaric fare. By Mitra, it's a full plate this night. Yarr! Enjoy!
General Mills Radio Adventure Theater. I'm Tom Bosley, once again waiting to welcome you to the magic world of radio adventure. The gates are open, so come on in and meet one of the greatest heroes of all time, Ulysses. Ulysses the brave, Ulysses the crafty, Ulysses whose unbelievable adventures have thrilled people for thousands of years. Ulysses, the man who conquered a great city with a wooden horse. Our story, The Travels of Ulysses, is based on Homer's Iliad and Odyssey and written especially for the General Mills Radio Adventure Theater by Paul Tripp. It stars Michael Wager. I shall return shortly with Act One. Homer, who more than 2,500 years ago first told the adventures you're about to hear, was a blind poet who was very poor and wandered from town to town chanting his stories. As time went on, scribes transferred his words to books, which we today have inherited from the ancient rulers who treasured them. Of all the heroes Homer sang about, none has captured the hearts of people more than Ulysses.
I am Ulysses, once king of Ithaca, the son of Laertes, the husband of Penelope, and father of young Telemachus. Once I lived in peaceful happiness and thought it would last forever. And then, one day...
Ulysses, my husband, why do you frown?
Oh, Penelope, I fear the days of our happiness are not many. Today, Menelaus, king of Sparta, comes to have words with me. And the word I fear most to hear is war.
You think then he will declare war on the city of Troy?
He has no choice. The Trojan prince Paris has stolen his wife Helen and will not return her. Menelaus' pride is at stake. He'll fight. And because we are sworn to be allies, I will have to fight at his side.
But is there no way out?
None that I can think of. Unless...
Unless what? Why are you smiling, Ulysses?
Perhaps there is a way out. Listen to me, Penelope. If you were a king going into battle, would you want to have a madman, a lunatic fighting by your side?
Of course not. But I don't understand. What madman are you talking about?
A madman called Ulysses.
You? But you're the sanest of all men. The wisest.
Precisely. That is why Menelaus wants me at his side. But supposing I should pretend to have lost my senses... What good would I be to Menelaus then?
But do you think he would believe you?
If I played my part well, he would. Yes, Penelope, I think this plan can work, but you must help me. Menelaus has arrived. The play begins.
Welcome to Ithaca, noble Agamemnon.
Well, it's good to see you again, Penelope, and you, my old friend, Ulysses. But why do you call me Agamemnon? I'm Menelaus's brother. Don't you recognize me?
Of course I recognize you. Why do you try to trick me? You're Agamemnon. I'd know you anywhere.
What is this? Is the sun in your eyes, Ulysses? I am Menelaus. Am I not Menelaus, Penelope?
Well, of course you are. Ulysses, my dear husband, you are mistaken. This is indeed Menelaus.
If you say so, wife. I could have sworn. No matter. Oh, come, Menelaus, don't look so confused.
Laugh!
Well, Ulysses, I must admit you had me convinced for a moment there. Well, I have...
But first, you must look at our son Telemachus sleeping in his cradle here. Is he not a lusty one?
Oh, that he is. My congratulations to you both. How old is he?
10 years old. Tomorrow he gets his first lesson in archery.
10? Did you say 10? Well, I must admit I don't know much about babies, but your Telemachus seems to be barely 2 years old.
Now, why did I say 10? Why, Penelope?
Because you wish to tease Menelaus, that's why. But you mustn't. He's come a long way to speak on a serious matter. You must listen to him.
Of course, I must listen to him. Eek, while I go to a corner and think.
Penelope, what ails your husband? I've never seen him like this.
Nor have I. For days I have seen this coming on. He's been behaving so strangely. Oh, Menelaus, I'm so worried that he's losing his mind.
Oh, nonsense. Ulysses lose his mind? Never. I will ask him what's bothering him.
No, you will only make him angry. He doesn't know anything's wrong with him. Let us speak naturally. I was so sorry to hear about your wife, Helen. Is it true that Prince Paris of Troy has stolen her away from you?
Yes, it is true. That's why I'm here. I'm gathering up an army to attack the Trojans and free her. And I want Ulysses to come with us. I need his help. Did you hear that, Ulysses? I want you to come and help me fight against the Trojans. Will you come?
Of course I will come. But first I must yoke up my oxen and plow the seashore. Come along and watch me.
Plow the seashore? Has he really gone mad?
Please say nothing. Do as he asks or he'll be angry. See, I shall take the baby with us. We will pretend that nothing's wrong.
But I find all this very hard to believe.
And let us show Menelaus what a straight furrow we can plow.
But, Ulysses, what will you plant in all this sand?
Salt. What else will grow in sand?
Salt? No, this has gone too far. Either he is mad or I am. Give me the child, Penelope. We shall soon find out.
No, Menelaus. The child will be killed. Ulysses, be careful. He's placed our child in the path of your plow. No!
Whoa! All right, enough of this play-acting, Ulysses. You're no more insane than I am.
Menelaus, why did you place our child in the path of a plow? I might have hurt him.
Not if you were sane, my wily friend. Oh, no. You were a bit too mad for my taste. I had to prove it.
For the first time in my life, I've been outwitted. Well, Penelope, we tried. Now we must return to the palace where you will help me put on my sword and armor.
No, Ulysses, you must not go.
Penelope, do not weep. With your husband's help, we will make it a short war. The Trojans are no match for us.
He's right, Penelope. I shall be back in Ithaca with you before our son is another year older. Wait for me. And so, unwillingly, I went off to war. And unwillingly, I fought. and in vain. The walls of Troy were too strong for us. My homesickness grew stronger and stronger as the years went by. 10 long years.
Ulysses, what are we to do? Once again, the Trojans have beaten back our attack. The city walls are too thick and strong. Ulysses, are you listening?
Oh, Menelaus. Just sitting here thinking about my son, Telemachus. He's 12 years old today. I wonder what he looks like now. To have a son and never watch him as he grows is a terrible fate for a father.
Yes, 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 I know, Ulysses, but we have a war on our hands here. 10 long years and no victory to show for it.
I've had enough of this fighting. Let me go home. Release me from my oath.
No, never. Not while my own wife Helen is held prisoner by the Trojans. Give me a way to take the city of Troy, and I'll row you back to Ithaca myself.
There is one trick I have been mulling over. It might work. To enter the city of Troy in a wooden horse.
In a wooden horse? Are you playing the madman again?
Hear me out. First, we build an enormous hollow horse of wood. Then we hide 50 of our bravest men within the horse. In the dark of night, they will then open the city gates and your army will enter.
Not so fast, Ulysses, not so fast. The wooden horse is still outside the city. How does it get inside?
The Trojans themselves will take it in.
Why would they do a stupid thing like that?
Because they will think the Greeks have given up the fight. You and your army will sail away and hide your ships behind that island, where the Trojans cannot see you. At night, when Troy is asleep, you will return. The men in the wooden horse will then steal out and open the gates. The rest is up to you and your men.
Well, so far, so good. But suppose the Trojans set fire to the horse and never fall for your scheme.
When you and your men sail away, you will leave me behind, disguised as a Greek traitor. I shall tell them the horse is a gift from you, acknowledging defeat. Trust me to speak the right words. And so the wooden horse was built and placed on wheels, and 50 brave men entered the horse. Then it was wheeled in front of the city where all Troy could see it. While the Trojans watched, the Greek ships unfurled their sails and left. I was alone on the Trojan plain. I and the wooden horse. The Trojans stood on their city walls watching and wondering. I felt thousands of eyes boring into me. At last the city gates opened and a chariot came out and thundered toward me.
Oh, there! You there! What is the meaning of this wooden horse? And who are you? I am Priam, king of Troy. Speak or die.
Rejoice, O great king, for a great victory is yours.
What victory?
Forgive me, your majesty, but are you blind? Can you not see the treacherous Greeks have sailed away? Can you not see the Greeks are defeated?
And the wooden horse? Why was that left here?
As a testament to Trojan courage. Though the Greeks are cowards, they admire bravery.
I do not need their testament. The horse shall be burned.
Ah, Ulysses said you would do that.
The crafty monster said that.
I heard him. He ridiculed you, King Priam, and said you would never dare bring the horse into the city lest it bring you misfortune.
I no longer fear misfortune. I, who have had so much sorrow for the past 10 years, yet I think the horse should burn.
And miss the opportunity to make the Greeks the laughing stock of the world. They told me you were a wise king. Were they mistaken?
Then, Greek traitor, if you are so wise, what would you do?
I would bring the horse into the city and celebrate the whole night long around it, and then mockingly let the whole world know how the Greeks help you to celebrate their own defeat. I would turn the Trojan horse into a Greek donkey. And you, Priam, would then have the last laugh.
I like your humor, Greek stranger. When was it when last I laughed?
We shall do as you say.
The ancient Romans had a saying, beware of Greeks bearing gifts. Perhaps they meant that hollow wooden horse. Troy was situated a long way from Greece, at a point where Asia and Europe join each other. The ships on which the Greeks sailed to do battle with the Trojans were painted black with high beaks at either end, which were painted red. In those days, sailors feared to sail out of sight of land. To conquer the Trojans, the Greeks also had to conquer the sea. I shall return shortly with Act Two. The General Mills Radio Adventure Theater will return shortly.
On a Lincoln banner.
Though our story happened almost 3,000 years ago, the Trojan horse is still used today as a wartime trick whereby one side can get into an enemy city and capture it. Only today we call it a fifth column. Spies who disguise themselves as friends to steal into an enemy city. But the intention is the same. Capture the city. It is now a few hours before dawn. The people of Troy have celebrated themselves into a deep, happy sleep.
The city was quiet. All Troy slept. No sentry guarded the walls. The Greeks had gone. The city was safe. Or so the Trojans thought. I gave the signal to the men waiting inside the wooden horse. Everybody out! Quickly now! Shh! Careful! If the Trojans wake now, we're finished. Amicus, take half the men to the palace. Attack when you hear the signal. The rest of you come to the city gate with me. Softly, now unbar the gate. Now open it. Menelaus, are you out there?
Ready and waiting.
Then the time is now.
Well, Menelaus, Troy is yours at last. The walls are down. I've kept my word. There is nothing left to keep me here. I bid you farewell.
Oh, but must you go so soon? Tonight we celebrate my reunion with my wife, Helen.
Celebrate to your heart's content, but my own wife waits in Ithaca. Ho! Amicus! Are the oarsmen in their places?
Aye, aye, Ulysses.
Then unfurl the sails. Ithaca waits for us.
And so at last, I left Troy. The winds were friendly and gently sped us towards Ithaca, while my heart sang. After a month, we landed on a strange island to take on water and fresh food. Amicus and I went ashore first. We found a cave huge as the Parthenon in Athens and entered.
Look, Ulysses. We have found a treasure house of food. See the wheels of cheese and the pails filled with milk. We're in luck.
Aye, Amicus. The gods have been good to us. Run back to the ship and bring some men to carry this food back. I will sit here by the fire and await the owner of this cave so that I may pay him back for the food we take. Hurry now. No. No, wait. Someone approaches. It may be the shepherd whose cave this is. We'll greet him together.
Come, my fat sheep. Into the cave with you. The sun will soon be setting.
Ulysses, those sheep are twice as big as we are. Have we blundered into the cave of a giant? Ye gods of Olympus, I cannot believe my eyes. Look at this giant. His head reaches to the ceiling of the cave, and that huge one eye in the center of his forehead, shining like a blazing lantern. Oh, Ulysses, I'm afraid.
Well, you may be. He is a cyclops. He and his brothers are known to be friends to the Trojans. We must not let him know that we are Greeks.
Why has he rolled that boulder across the mouth of the cave?
To keep his flock locked in for the night.
And we as well. Ulysses, we're trapped.
Calmly, and calmly we will find a way out.
Oh, there, friend. You have visitors, peaceful visitors.
Who speaks? I cannot see you.
Look down. We stand at your feet.
Why, by my father Neptune, god of the sea, you are pygmies. Who are you? Why are you here?
We are sailors whose ship has lost its way. Be gentle with us. We mean you no harm.
What harm could you do me, pygmies? You, the one who speaks so smoothly. I wonder if you would taste as sweet as you sound.
I sound sweet to your ears because you have not spoke to a human being in so long. You must be very lonely here. I am sorry for you.
How kind of you. Yes, it is lonely here. My brother, who lives in another cave, is not very talkative. But why should I talk to you when I can eat you?
No! No, I beg of you!
No, Cyclops. Wait, I have a better idea. Why not do both? The night is long, we can talk first, and I will tell you news of the world, and in the morning you can have us for breakfast.
Very well. I shall spare you till morning. How are you called?
They that call me Nobody.
Very well, Nobody. Now talk. Tell me about the world.
And so I talked into the night, making my voice sweet and soft like a lullaby. The Cyclops' head nodded. He could hardly keep that one eye of his open. My voice grew softer and softer.
He is asleep, Ulysses. Now, how do we get away? Can we budge the boulder from the mouth of the cave?
No, that is beyond our strength. We must think of another way. Wait. Hand me that long strip of cloth there, Amicus. We will wrap it tightly around his one eye. Help me lift his head gently now. Don't wake him out. Make a tight sailor's knot that he cannot untie.
But how does this blindfold help us?
When I wake him, I will make him think I have made him blind. And now, to waken him.
Hold there. Cyclops, are you still asleep? Dawn is coming.
Who calls? Is it morning so soon? But why is it so dark?
Dark? Who says it is dark? Do you not see the fire still burning brightly?
What fire? I see nothing. What has happened to me?
Listen well, Cyclops, and I shall tell you. In the night, while you slept, I smeared a magic ointment on your eye.
You have blinded me. I don't believe
it. No, wait. Do not put your hand to your eye. You will be blind forever. Keep your hands at your sides for your own sake. I, who am called Nobody, warn you.
Oh, if I could see you, I would crush you to death.
He is rolling aside the boulder from the mouth of his cave. He's letting us free.
I very much doubt it, Amicus.
Cyclops, what kind of shepherd are you? The sun is rising. Your sheep are hungry. Send them out into the meadows to graze.
You're right. I had forgotten my flock. Oh, there, my pretty, hungry sheep. Your master has not forgotten you. The green grass waits outside for you. Go and eat to your heart's content.
Quickly, Amicus, under the bellies of the sheep. We'll crawl our way to freedom underneath them.
Come, my pretties. Out you go, one by one. Eat hearty while I stay in the cave with Nobody and Nobody's friend. And when I find them, I shall put an end to them.
We're
free, Amicus. We're out of the cave. Quick, let's make for the ship.
Row, my hearties, row. Soon the Cyclops will discover he's been tricked and come after us. Row, row for your lives.
Where are you, nobody? Oh, if I could only see.
Look, Ulysses, the Cyclops standing on the cliff. See, he's torn the blindfold from his eyes. Oh, row.
Farewell, Cyclops. Now that we sail away, I can tell you who I really am. I am Ulysses, King of Ithaca.
Ulysses, you shall pay for having tricked me. Heed my prayer, O Neptune, god of the sea. Punish Ulysses, who has tricked thy son. Let him wander forever on stormy seas. Let him never see his home again.
Neptune heard his son's prayer and answered it. The sea turned against us, and each time we drew close to Ithaca, the winds drove us away. 10 more years passed, and my homesickness tore at my heart like a vulture.
Ulysses, is that a ship approaching us? No, no. It looks more like a floating island.
I have led you. I have been searching for you.
Oh, the blessed relief to discover that my name had not been forgotten. It was the King of the Winds, Aeolus, who had come seeking me.
Your wandering days are over, Ulysses. Our gods say you have been punished enough. Your wife and child are waiting for you. Go home, Ulysses. Here, take the leather bag, tied with a silver string. All my storm winds are imprisoned within it. Do not open this leather bag, and you will reach home safely. I promise you.
Aeolus did not lie to me. Zephyr, the gentle west wind, calmly blew our ship northward. Northward. And one day when dusk fell, we came so near to Ithaca, we could see the people lighting fires on the shore. Tomorrow I would be home again at last.
Ulysses, the men have asked me to speak to you on their behalf.
Speak, Amicus. What is it they wish?
Yonder lies Ithaca, your home. It has taken us 10 years to get here. And in all those 10 years, have we not been faithful to you?
By the gods, that you have. And when we land, I shall reward you well.
The men want their reward now.
But I have nothing on the ship to give them.
What about the leather bag that King Aeolus gave to you? Share with us the wealth that is within it, and we will be content.
But there is nothing in that bag of any consequence.
You lie, Ulysses. It is filled with gold. You wish to keep all that gold for yourself.
Why do you draw a sword, old friend? Would you kill me?
Nay. But I will cut the bag open and see for myself what is in it.
No, no, stop. Amicus, you'll bring disaster upon us.
Too late. What have I done, Ulysses?
Oh. You've released the storm winds that were locked in the leather bag. Now we'll never see Ithaca again. See how the storm is blowing us out to sea.
The ship is breaking up. Swim! Swim for your lives!
Poor Ulysses, so near and yet so far. And after escaping the terrible Cyclops, too. But right now, I'm concerned with Ulysses' chances to survive that storm. We'll find out as soon as we return with Act 3. The General Mills Radio Adventure Theater will return shortly. Almost 20 years have gone by since our adventure began. So far, we've been in close touch with Ulysses. But what about his wife, Penelope? What happened to her while Ulysses was away? After the Trojan War was over and the Greeks had returned home, A rumor started that Ulysses was dead. Penelope refused to believe it. But others did, and many men came to Ithaca begging Penelope to marry one of them. Penelope stalled for time, but time was running out. So before we check on the whereabouts of Ulysses, let's first check in on Penelope in her palace.
Good morning, Penelope. Well, the time has come when you must tell us which one of us you will marry.
I will marry no one until it is certain that Ulysses is no longer among the living.
King Menelaus and the others have returned home, but where is Ulysses?
He promised me he would return. He will return. At this very moment, our son Telemachus is arranging to send many ships out in search for Ulysses and find him.
They will never find him. 3 years ago, you promised that you would choose one of us as your husband when you finished that tapestry that you're still weaving. One of your servants has confessed to me. Each night when we are gone, you unravel what you have woven and start again fresh in the morning. You could weave forever and never finish. We, the other suitors and I, have therefore had enough of this deceit. So tonight, you must choose one of us as your husband.
The next morning, after the storm, I awoke upon some unknown beach, very much surprised to find that I, Ulysses, was still alive. The first thing that I saw when I opened my eyes was an old man staring down at me.
I am glad you are alive, stranger. I had thought you dead.
And so did I, old man. Oh, tell me, what land is this and what men dwell here?
That question is easily answered. This land is Ithaca.
Who are you?
I am Laertes, father of Ulysses, who once ruled here as king.
Ulysses? I know the name well, and the man himself.
You knew my son? Did you see him die?
Who told you he is dead? When last I saw him at Troy, he was very much alive.
But that was 10 years ago. Is he alive now? Know you that?
Yes, I know, old man. Why do you stare so intently at me?
Oh, for a moment, do I know you, stranger? Have we met before? There is something so very familiar about you.
Now that I've told you about Ulysses and his Trojan horse, Laertes, you must tell me about his wife, Penelope. How is she?
In great distress. Since 3 years ago, when word came that Ulysses was dead, a horde of suitors descended upon her, demanding that she marry one of them tonight. I have been told she must decide on a new husband. There is no other way for her.
That ancient dog who lies beside the fire. Why does he stare at me so?
He is Ulysses' favorite dog. He was just a puppy when Ulysses went to Troy. For 20 years, he has been pining away for his master. A very long life for a dog, wouldn't you say?
Yes, and a faithful one as well. Here, boy. Here, Argus.
Argus, I'll know you his name. Who are you, stranger?
Argus knows me. Don't you, boy?
How strange. He is licking your face. He has not done that since the day Ulysses went off to war.
Perhaps he recognizes his old master. Father.
Father? You are Ulysses, my son. Let me look at you more closely. By the gods, you are my son. How could I recognize you before with so much gray in your hair and beard? Oh, my son, I weep for joy.
This is no time for tears. We must go to the palace and drive the suitors out.
But they will kill you when you make yourself known.
They will not know me, for I shall come disguised as an old beggar. I shall sit at the palace gate and beg for alms and watch.
And then?
And then, come with me, Father. Then we shall see what there is to be seen.
Who's this?
Well, if it isn't Laertes. Welcome, old man. Have you come to hear Penelope's decision? She chooses a new husband tonight.
Is not Ulysses a good enough husband for her? Why does she need another?
Because a good husband is not a dead husband, old man. Oh, there, Penelope, where are you? Your suitors await you.
Quickly, father. Go to Penelope. Tell her I must speak to her. Do not tell her who I am. She may give me away despite herself. And, father, after that, you must find those men still faithful to me. Let them arm themselves and surround the palace. Let them wait for my signal.
You wish to speak with me, beggar?
You are still as beautiful as you were on that sad day when Ulysses sailed to Troy.
You knew my husband?
As well as I know myself.
Oh, if only he were here now.
But he is. Your husband is in Ithaca.
He is alive. The gods be praised. But why is he not here with me?
It would be too dangerous, but do not fear. He will appear when the time comes.
But I need him now. In a few moments, I must name a new husband.
And so you shall. Tell him you have decided on which suitor you will marry.
But Ulysses is alive. Why should I marry another?
Have no fear. You will not if you carry out the plan which Ulysses has planned.
Penelope, welcome to our midst. Now, have you decided on which one of us you shall marry?
I have, Antoneus.
Well, then speak, Penelope. Which one of us do you choose?
The choice must be yours. You shall decide among yourselves.
Oh, another trick. You know very well we could not agree on one man when all men wish to marry you.
Well, then there must be some test among you. And he who proves to be the best among you shall marry me. Is that not fair?
Why, yes, Penelope. It seems that we are all agreed. So name the test and we shall vie with each other.
Very well, then. Antoneus, do you see that hunting bow hanging on the wall? And the quiver full of arrows hanging beside? Bring them to me.
Well, an archery contest, eh? Then it will be no contest at all. For am I not the greatest bowman in all Greece? Ah, here are the bow and arrows my wife-to-be. So name the target.
Not so fast. The bow must be strong first before you shoot at the target. It is the bow of a man, and it will take a man to bend it and string it.
Well, then why the mystery? Am I not a man? Are we not all men here?
Then prove to me that you are as good a man as my husband Ulysses, who you tell me is dead. For this is Ulysses' bow. No other man has strung it since he last departed 20 years ago.
Ah, so that's it. You wish us to prove we are just as strong as he is.
Is that not just, Antinous? Let me see you string the bow.
Bring it to me, and you shall see.
Ulysses, our men have surrounded the palace.
Good. When I give the signal, let them enter with naked swords and draw bows.
Well, Antinous, why do you not string the bow? Are you too weak?
You impudent beggar! Do not mock me, or you shall answer to me with your life.
Save your breath for the bow. Why do you not string it? An infant could do it, even an old beggar.
Oh, say you so? Very well, then, come and show me. But I warn you, if you fail, you will pay with your life.
Give me the bow, weakling. There. It is done.
Ulysses!
Ulysses? This beggar is Ulysses? How do you know that?
Oh, because only Ulysses could string this bow. Oh, welcome back, my husband.
Behold, Antinous, there is now an arrow waiting in my bow. What target shall I choose?
I care not. And you need not aim at my heart, for you cannot kill all of us. Draw your swords, my fellow suitors. For if Ulysses be not dead as we had heard, he soon will be.
Ho, Varla, sound the alarm! Now, Antinous, not my arrow alone is aimed at your heart, but many. Why are you so silent, boastful villain? Get you gone from my house, or will you stand and fight?
Nay, nay, we will go. You are too many for us.
Wisely spoken. Coward.
Go then and never let me see your faces again in Ithaca. March the rabble out, my faithful subjects!
Now, Penelope, my dear, dear wife, come to my arms and welcome me home once again.
I wish there'd been time to tell you about all the adventures Ulysses had. There was the one about Circe, the enchantress who turned men into pigs. There were the sirens who, with their sweet singing, lured sailors to their doom. There was the adventure where Ulysses had to choose sailing between Scylla, the six-headed monster, or Charybdis, the boiling whirlpool which sucked ships to the bottom of the sea. You can read about these for yourselves in the books of Homer at your library. I'll return shortly. There was a city named Troy. Homer did not invent it. As a matter of fact, when an archaeologist named Heinrich Schliemann decided to dig for the ruins of Troy 100 years ago, he found the city in exactly the place that Homer had described in his book, The Iliad. Now you tell me, which is stranger, fact or fiction? Our cast included Michael Wager, Ann Williams, Jackson Beck, Robert Dryden, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is Tom Bosley inviting you to return to the General Mills Radio Adventure Theater for another exciting tale you can hear through the magic of radio. The General Mills Radio Adventure Theater is recommended by NEA, the National Education Association.
The Mysterious Traveler.
This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back and get a good grip on your nerves, if you can. Where are we going? Tonight we're going on a little excursion into the realm of pure imagination. You've all heard the old saying, believe in a thing enough and it'll come true. Well, suppose many people came to believe in something couldn't possibly be real. Such as an artificial monster growing in a scientist's laboratory. What would happen? Well, if you want to know what might happen, listen to the story I call If You Believe. My story begins in a rambling old house deep in the woods. In a homemade laboratory, gray-haired Professor Jonathan Davis is peering eagerly into a large glass container that holds an odd, transparent, jelly-like substance.
Ellen! Oh, Ellen!
Yes, Dad?
Ellen, come quick.
I'm coming, dear. What is it?
Ellen, look. I think I've succeeded at last.
Oh, Dad.
You look. Your eyes are better than mine. Yes? Isn't there movement in the protoplasm this time? Isn't it stirring? Just a little?
No, Dad. There isn't any movement.
No? You're positive, Ellen? I was sure I saw some sign of life.
I'm quite positive, Dad. Now, please, won't you admit that what you're trying to do is impossible?
No, Ellen. No, I will succeed. I know it. Now, come, we've got to try another feeding mixture. As you hand me the saline solution and dextrose, and I'll begin again.
But while Professor Davis labored in his lonely seclusion to make a lifelong dream come true, Something that was to affect him vitally was happening in the editorial room of the largest newspaper in the nearby city.
Study desk, Benson speaking. Oh, hello, Mr. McGuire. Yes? Oh, yes, sure, I've been reading Dan Duncan's special features. I edit them. I see. You don't think they've been colorful enough lately, huh? Well, to tell the truth, I agree with you. I've been meaning to speak to him about it. Yes. Sure, I'll do it now. He just came in. Right. Right. Good night, Mr. McGuire. Hey, Dan.
Yeah, Joe. What cooks?
The big boss just phoned down.
What's he want?
Well, frankly, he thinks you're slipping.
McGuire thinks I'm slipping. Well, I like that.
That's what he said.
And I've done everything to get hot material except to go out and commit a murder myself.
Well, maybe he's tired of murders. You want to know why you don't turn up something like that haunted house story you did last spring?
Why, I don't. That was a good story, wasn't it?
It was honey.
Yeah. Especially the description of the way the ghost of the drowned girl walked around the house, leaving wet spots where it stepped. You know, I caught a heck of a cold walking around in wet socks to make those footmarks.
No more than you deserve for faking a story.
Yeah, faking a story. Listen, Benson, any time a million readers believe a story, it's true. And they believed in that ghost.
Every one of them. I'm not saying they didn't, but McGuire wants another story just as good.
I got a good mind to tell the old buzzard to fly a kite. Another story like... Hey.
Huh? What is it?
I think I got it. Hey, Ted. Ted Jones.
Oh, yeah, Dan.
Front and center.
Oh. Yeah, what is it, Dan?
All right, dump your camera on the desk and sit.
Okay.
Now tell me, what was that story you told me last week about some professor living up in the woods back at town, never coming out of his private lab?
Oh, you mean Professor Davis?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. Well, what about him?
There was a fuss over something he said in a lecture one day, wasn't there?
A fuss? Well, it was more like an explosion.
Hey, wait a minute. I remember that case. The professor claimed he could create an artificial man, wasn't that it?
No. He said that an artificial man might be produced someday. Might be.
Well, the paper said he claimed he could create one.
Yeah, I know.
Well, it made a good story, didn't it?
And drove Professor Davis out of the university into retirement. Oh, the school didn't like the publicity.
Water under the bridge, kid. Anyway, here's the old professor working away secretly for the last 5 years. All alone?
No, he wasn't all alone. His daughter Ellen's with him.
How old is she?
Oh, she was 15 then, so...
She's 20 now. Good looker?
Well, I was in Professor Davis's class. I remember it was a skinny brat with yellow hair.
Yeah, good, a blonde. So here's the prof secretly working with his beautiful blonde daughter at what?
I'll bite.
What? Why, he's trying to prove he was right. He's trying to create an artificial man.
Say, you've got something there.
Oh, now, wait a minute. You don't know Professor Davis is trying to create artificial life.
Well, we soon will. You know where his hideout is, don't you?
Yeah.
All right, then grab your camera. Let's get going.
Oh, no, wait a minute, Dan. Suppose you find Professor Davis is...
Forget it. Benson, save me 2 columns. Come on, Ted. We're on our way.
There, Ellen. It's done. Now we must warm it ever so gently. It'll stay at blood heat until morning. And then, Ellen...
Oh, I hope so, Dad, but... Darling, if you fail again, won't you please promise me to stop trying to create this artificial protoplasm?
Well, we'll talk about that in the morning. Now, who could that be?
I'll go see, Dad. Yes?
I'm Ted Jones, Miss Davis. I don't suppose you remember me.
Ted Jones? Oh, you were one of Father's students, weren't you?
Yes, that's right. I'm a newspaper photographer now. Oh. Could we come in? I have a friend with me, a reporter.
Ellen, and... who is it?
Newspaper men, Dad. They want to see you.
Newspaper men, don't let them in. Send them away.
I come now, Professor. We just want to ask you a couple of questions, and but we can talk better inside, so... There. Now we can talk like friends.
Hey, but Dan, we weren't invited in.
How dare you force your way in here? Get out, both of you.
Please go.
Dan, come on. Professor Davis doesn't want to talk to us.
Keep your shirt on, Ted. Just a couple of questions, Professor. Now, isn't it true that hidden away here, you're creating artificial life?
I won't answer your questions. You just print more lies and ruin everything I'm trying to do.
Then you are creating artificial life, huh?
Young man,
Tell me how far you've gotten. You figuring on springing an artificial man on us one of these days?
You fools. While I still struggle to create synthetic protoplasm, you talk of artificial men. Go, go before I throw you out.
Please go, please.
Come on, Dan, we're leaving.
Okay, we're going. Thanks for the interview, Professor. Read all about it in tomorrow's Curtain.
The imbeciles. What do they know of science? All they want is to cheapen my work. Make it a sensation for the headlines.
Oh, please, Father, you must get control of yourself. They've gone now.
Yes, yes, dear. Well, they shan't interfere with my work. Well, Ellen. Ellen.
Yes, Dad, what is it?
Ellen, the mixture's moving. This time I'm sure of it. The protoplasm. It's alive.
Say, Dan, this is something.
Huh?
Behind bolted doors deep in the woods, Professor Jonathan Davis toils night and day to create the world's first synthetic man. In a great vat lies a strange caricature of humanity. It has a head, arms, legs, a body, all of them fashioned of a pale green substance like gelatin.
Nice touch, huh?
Day by day, life stirs more strongly in this grotesque creation of science. Someday it may breathe, walk, eat. Now look, Dan, aren't you going pretty strong?
Ah, forget it. The old man wants a story, does he? Besides, the professor really is working on synthetic protoplasm. Maybe he has got a pale green monster in his bathtub. How do I know?
Okay, Dan, but if you're faking this story, I know nothing about it.
Faking it? You know I never fake stories.
Okay. We'll set this up and put it in the press wires. By noon tomorrow, 40 million people will be believing in Professor Davis' artificial monster.
By noon tomorrow, I'll be believing in it myself.
And so, all over the nation, people read the story and marveled and believed. While in the laboratory, hidden in the woods.
Ellen, look. This time it is alive. It is. There can be no doubt of it.
The liquid is certainly moving, Dad.
Yes, see? And the protoplasm is breathing. Listen. You can hear. I created artificial life, Ellen.
Yes, I'm afraid so, Dad.
Afraid so? What do you mean? I'd like to see their faces out at the university when they hear of this.
It's grown since last night.
Yes, it has. The cells are multiplying like true protoplasm. That's why I transferred it to this gas tank. Now I must add salt, acid, phosphorus.
Oh, that must be grocery boy. Excuse me, Dad. Yes? Oh, you.
Miss Davis, I hope that you'll let me apologize.
We have nothing to say to you.
Please don't shut the door before I explain.
Explain? There's nothing to explain. You force your way in here.
I came to apologize for that. Well, have you seen the morning papers?
We're not interested in the papers.
I'm afraid you'll be interested in this one. Look.
Oh, how outrageous.
That story of your father creating an artificial man is in every paper in the country, and I feel I'm to blame, and I want to make up for it. Can't I come in so we can talk?
I guess you'd better, Mr. Jones. But Dad mustn't see this paper.
Oh, no, of course not. But won't he recognize me?
No, I don't think so. He's very nearsighted. I'll just tell him that you used to be one of his students.
And if you'll tell me the real truth, I'll try to get the paper to understand that Dan Duncan just made up his story.
Who is it, Ellen?
It's Ted Jones, Dad, one of your former students. He called to say hello.
Jones? Yes, Ted Jones. Oh, yes, of course. Organic chemistry, wasn't it, Jones?
Oh, yes, sir.
You're the one who kept breaking things. Oh, Jones, I have something here you'd be very interested in. Come and see.
Yes, sir.
Look. That stuff in the tank. That seems to be alive. It is alive. Synthetic protoplasm, my boy, the first ever created.
It's breathing.
Yes, and it's also growing. Life becomes stronger in it by the moment.
It's changing color, Dad. Becoming a pale green.
Yes, growing fast. Very fast. I never dreamed success would come
Hello,
so completely.
Hiya, Dad. I thought I'd find you here.
Why, Dan.
Dan Duncan himself. Hiya, Professor.
What do you want here?
Oh, just a few pictures. Shot of you in your lab, so far.
You have the nerve to come here after what you've done.
What I've done? You haven't seen anything yet. You and your father are big news now. You're going to be bigger.
Dan, you'd better go.
Better go? I don't follow you, kid.
I said you'd better go. There isn't any story here for you.
No story? Hey, what's eating you? Aren't you here to get a follow-up?
No, I came here to get the truth. Something you wouldn't be interested in.
Hey, what kind of talk is that?
Are you going to go? Will I have to throw you out?
Throw me out? Now listen, kid.
You want me to try it? All right, I will.
Okay, I'm going. Take your hands off me. But don't think you can get away with this. You're fired.
And that's all right with me.
And as for you, Professor, you and your artificial man are going to be so well known in a day or two, you'll be getting offers from Hollywood.
And so, with each edition of the papers, the headlines grew bigger.
Every paper, read all about it, all about the artificial monster. Every paper.
The telegraph wires carried editorials condemning Professor Davis.
Is it a man or is it a monster Professor Davis has created? By his refusal to answer questions, the professor led us to suspect that he was created.
Radio commentators spread the story to still more listening millions.
A strange substance like pale green gelatin. Now it moves and stirs in its confinement, seeking to escape. This strange creation of the century.
And speakers denounced Professor Davis.
And I ask you, can science be permitted to venture into these forbidden realms unchecked? Who knows what horror may emerge from the laboratory if we are not careful? This mad thing must be stopped. Stop!
Ted, did you have any trouble?
No, I got the medicine for your father, all right, and I brought the evening papers, too.
What did they say?
Pretty bad. They're all using Duncan's story, and he shot the works.
Ted, how can he do such a thing?
Well, he's a very plausible writer. He has a knack for making people believe him. If anybody accuses him of lying, he'll just say that he was misled by your father.
I see. I'm sorry you lost your job trying to help us.
That doesn't matter. I was about ready to quit anyway. How is your father now?
He seems to be sleeping quietly.
Well, I'm sticking around until he's all right again.
Well, you don't have to do that, Ted. I'll make up.
Well, if I hadn't gotten into that fight with Duncan, your father might not have had his stroke.
No, it was just the excitement. It's his heart, but I know how to take care of him. But, Ted, I'm frightened.
About your father?
No, about it, the protoplasm.
Oh.
It's changed just since this morning.
It's changed? How?
It's grown and... Well, come on, see for yourself.
All right. Well, that seems to be taking on shape.
Yes, and it looks... Oh, Ted, it looks like green gelatin.
Just the way Duncan describes it.
And look, there's a vague shape like a head and the rough outline of arms and legs.
Oh, it isn't possible.
It shouldn't be, but it's happening. Something terrible is taking place inside that glass tank.
I don't understand. Your father certainly never intended to create this.
You know, all afternoon I've been wondering if Father really has created it.
I don't follow you, Ellen. Do you mean some outside force might be responsible?
Ted, you know the old saying, believe in a thing enough and it'll come true.
Yes, of course.
Well, I think that's true. The power of belief is a tremendous thing. People begin to believe that... Well, that there's going to be a depression, and there is a depression.
But, Ellen...
They begin to believe that strangers and foreigners are enemies. And pretty soon they are enemies. They believe there's going to be a war. And war comes.
Well, that's true, but what are you getting at?
How many people are reading Dan Duncan's story this very minute, right now, while we're talking?
Oh, hundreds of thousands, probably, all over the nation. Maybe a million.
And they all believe it's true.
Well, a good many of them. Yes, Dan has a genius for being plausible.
Then don't you see, Ted? Here in this laboratory is the necessary material for a monster. Mm-hmm. And out there are all those people believing in such a fantastic monster.
You mean a million people are thinking life into the protoplasm?
Yes, Ted. I know it sounds fantastic, but that monster was never created by my father. Dan Duncan created it when he wrote about it.
Well, if that's true...
There's no other answer. Over there in that glass tank is something that's alive only because millions of people believe it's alive.
No, it is alive. There's no telling what it may become. Ellen, we have to destroy it.
It'll break Dad's heart, but we can't let it live.
Well, it's growing bigger by the minute. We've got to get rid of it now before it grows any larger.
There's acid in those bottles. There, that'll destroy it.
All right. Yeah, I see. Here. Just as soon as I get it open... This will take care of the creature.
Be careful, Ted. It can burn you dreadfully.
Ellen, what's happening? What are you doing?
Dad, darling, you're supposed to be in bed.
Yeah, I'm feeling better. I wanted to see how the protoplasm was.
Please go back to bed, Dot. Your heart.
Oh, my heart's all right, but I must be sure. Oh, it's changed. It's taken on a form.
Yes, Professor, a monstrous, unnatural form.
It has a head, arms, legs. But it can't have. It's only protoplasm. It's all impossible.
Unfortunately, it's true. I can't explain now, but, well, we've got to destroy it.
No, the culmination of my life's work. You can't destroy it.
We must, then.
No, I won't let you.
It's the only thing to do.
Professor, look at it. It's crawling around inside the tank now. It's trying to climb out.
But it can't be dangerous. It's just harmless protoplasm.
Dad, Ted is right. You've got to let us kill it.
It's just protoplasm, I tell you.
It was just protoplasm.
Stand back, Professor. I'm going to empty this acid on
you. No, you mustn't. I will...
Dad!
Professor Davis! Professor Davis, look out! Why, the tank... He fell against the tank and broke it.
Is he hurt, Ted?
Well, I'll see. Oh.
Ted, the protoplasm is moving toward him.
We've got to get him out of here. I have his arms. Quick, you take his feet.
I have
his...
Oh, hurry up, Ted. He's trying to crawl out of the tank.
We've got to get him upstairs. Can you manage it?
Yes. Keep on.
All right, easy now, easy. All right, just a little farther. All right, one more step, Ellen. There. Here's the landing. We can put him down here. Now, easy. Easy. There.
Ted, I can't find his pulse.
Let me try.
Dad? Ted's no use. He's gone.
I'm afraid so.
His heart failed him. I've always known it would someday. Ted, down in the laboratory.
Yes, it's moving. Look, it's gotten out of the tank and it's crawling all around the lab.
And the only way out is down those stairs and through the lab. We're trapped up here.
Look, I'm not saying it isn't a good story, Dan. It's a whale of a story. But McGuire wants some pictures.
Pictures? How can I get pictures? I can't even get into the place.
I don't care. Just get them.
You want me to bust in the window, I suppose?
Let your conscience be your guide. And I know you haven't got a conscience. But make it fast. I want those shots for the late morning edition.
All right. I'm going. With a camera in one hand and a bunch of skeleton keys in the other.
It's looking for food, Ted.
Yes, and it's getting frantic. Look how it crawls back and forth through the lab. It's been doing that for an hour now.
Look how enormous it's grown. Suppose it tries to come up these stairs to this balcony.
Well, it may not. It has no eyes, no intelligence. It's just protoplasm, blindly seeking food.
But suppose it does try to come up the stairs.
Well, then we'll stop it. I have the gun here that I found in your father's desk. I'll use that on it.
I don't think it would even feel a bullet.
Well, we'll see. There. It's on the other side of the lab now, in plain sight. Stand back, Garen. I'll try a couple of shots. I hit it.
It didn't even notice.
No. Oh, if we could only reach those bottles of acid, that would fix it.
But every time we've started down the stairs, it's rushed over to wait for us.
Must feel the vibration of it. I'm going to take one more try.
Ted, please be careful.
Yes, I will. I'll tiptoe down one step at a time. Perhaps I can avoid attracting its attention this time. What's it doing now?
Lying quiet, as if it was listening.
Only lie quiet a few seconds more. I'm almost at the bottom.
Ted, quick! It's coming this way!
No, no, no.
Oh, Ted, it almost got
yes,
you.
Yes, it did touch my foot, but well, I wasn't interested in getting any better acquainted.
What are we going to do now?
I don't know. I don't know, Ellen. If we could only reach that acid. Say, I wonder if it would make any difference if we turned out the lights. They can be controlled from up here, can't they?
Oh, yes, but what good would that do?
Well, in the dark, it might become inactive. Some elementary organisms are like that.
Well, we can try it. Okay, I'll turn out the lights. There. Pitch black now. But it's still moving around.
Well, just wait a moment. Listen.
What is it, Tim?
I heard footsteps outside the house.
Footsteps?
Just listen.
There's someone coming in the front door. Yeah, there's someone in the lab.
But who would... Good heavens, Al.
Duncan, is that you, Dan? Dan, answer me. Is that you? Get out, quick!
Okay, kid, keep your shirt on. I'm going as soon as I get a picture of this joint.
But, Dan, you don't understand. It's loose. Get away, quick! Ellen, turn on that light.
Yes, kid.
You can't scare me, kid. I came to get a picture, and I'm going to get it.
Run, Dan, run! Help me!
Ellen, Ellen, don't
go.
Here, you take this one. I'll take one. We'll break them over it, understand?
Yes, Ted.
Well, come on, then.
He's gone. Duncan's gone.
It's covering him. It's eating him. Ellen, throw your bottle now. You only got a force of it enough to kill anything. The acid is burning into it. It's killing it. Ellen is dying.
It's not moving anymore.
It's not breathing either. We've killed it.
It's starting to melt away. It's dissolving.
Now that it's dead, it's turning back into the liquid it started from. The substance that the belief of millions gave an unreal life to.
Well, it's gone back to a liquid now. There's nothing left of it.
It's gone as if it had never existed.
Except for Dan Duncan. Oh, Tim.
There's nothing we can do for him, Ellen. He's dead. He created the monster. It's killed him.
This is the mysterious traveler again. Well, maybe it's true about believing in things and making them happen. Wars and depressions and artificial monsters and things like that. I think I'll make a New Year's resolution to be careful what I believe in 1947. No more believing in bogeymen or spooks. I might meet one. Instead, I'll try believing in some of the nicer things for a change. Such as peace and goodwill among nations. Well, if I can get enough people to join me, maybe they'll come true and... Oh, you'll have to get off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this time.
You're just heard The Mysterious Traveler, a series of dramas of the strange and terrifying. In today's cast were Maurice Tauplin, Chuck Webster, Louise Fitch, Wendell Holmes, Edgar Staley, and Bill Smith. Original music was played by Doc Whipple. The Mysterious Traveler is written, produced, and directed by Bob Arthur and David Kogan. And now, a preview of next week's strange story by The Mysterious Traveler.
It's only 2 days now to New Year's Eve. Were you planning a big celebration to greet 1947? I'd be careful if I were you. Because, you see, our story next week is about a man who did just that. In fact, it was such a big celebration that when he got over it, it wasn't 1947 at all, but 1948. He lost a whole year out of his life. And when he finally got the year back, well, what happened to him shouldn't happen to a werewolf. So take it easy, New Year's Eve, so you'll be sure to be on hand next week for the strange and terrifying tale I call New Year's Nightmare.
The Mysterious Traveler is presented from our New York studios. Carl Caruso speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
No, O Prince, between the time when the oceans drank Atlantis and the rise of recorded history, there was an age undreamed of. When shining kingdoms lay spread across the world, like blue mantles beneath the stars. From the north came a Sumerian, sword in hand. A thief, a reaver, a slayer, with gigantic melancholies and gigantic mirth, to tread the jeweled thrones of the earth under his sandaled feet. Broken Sea Audio Productions presents the full cast audio dramatization of The Queen of the Black Coast, a tale of Conan, written by Robert E. Howard. Episode 6.
Was it a dream the night of Lotus brought? And cursed the dream that brought my sluggish life. And cursed each laggard hour that does not see. Hot blood dripped blackly in the crimsoned knife.
Song of Belief.
Having discovered the treasure of the Ancient Ones in the Lost City, Belit is entranced by their beauty, while Conan fears evil is afoot. His supposition is bolstered after sighting a great winged and hairy demon flying above the ruins. And it is soon discovered the beast has destroyed all the supplies on the Tigris. Conan takes a band of warriors in search of water and provisions into the jungle, while Belit and her remaining warriors tend to the treasure.
Crom! This jungle closes quickly! Changing the life from gold to gray. Damnable arching green branch creepers dangle like pythons. You, fall into single file behind me. We'll never get through this dank undergrowth any other way. The deeper we plunge into the green waving depths, the less we find. Still no sign of water, either running stream or stagnant pool. Crumb, hold. Yagora.
Water.
You go ahead. March straight on until you can no longer see me. Then stop and wait for me.
Water.
I believe we're being followed. I heard something.
Water.
Rom, I'll get behind this tree and see what lurks. Nothing, but I smell something. The very air is impregnated with some exotic scent. A scent I... Rum! What was there? Great black blossoms nodding at me. Arching, beckoning, spreading. Crom, the Black Lotus! Damn the gods. Its juice is death. Its scent brings nightmare. Haunted slumber. My sword, so heavy, cannot lift. Sleepy. I am
so tired. Conan falls prey to the noxious, psychedelic, and deadly odors of the Black Lotus plant, falling into a catatonic slumber as his warriors scream in the distance. First, there was a blackness of an utter void, with the cold winds of cosmic space blowing through it. Then shapes, vague, monstrous, and evanescent, rolled in dim panorama through the expanse of nothingness, as if the darkness were taking material form. The winds blew, and a vortex formed. A whirling pyramid of roaring blackness. From it grew shape and dimension. Then suddenly, like clouds dispersing, the darkness rolled away on either hand, and a huge city of dark green stone rose on the bank of a wide river, flowing through an illimitable plain. Through this city moved beings of alien configuration.
What is happening? I float, yet I'm grounded. What sorcery be this?
Lie still, Cimmerian, and hearken to our tale.
Know you that when we raised our colossal Emerald City, man's primal ancestors had not yet risen from the slime of the primordial seas.
Though to you, gods, we might appear, we were but mortal, of flesh and blood like yourself, Conan, though far more evolved.
We lived, loved, and died, though our individual span of life was enormous. Then, after uncounted millions of years, the change began.
Hearken as the vision changes. Follow the age and pay heed, Conan.
Watch it shimmer and waver like a picture on a wind-blown curtain. Over the city and the land, the ages flowed as waves flow over a beach, and each wave brought alterations. Somewhere on the planet, the magnetic centers were shifting. The great glaciers and ice fields were withdrawing toward the new pole.
The littoral of the great river altered. Plains turned into swamps that stank with reptilian life. Where fertile meadows had rolled, forests reared up, growing into dank jungles. The changing ages wrought on the inhabitants of the city as well, upon our race. We did not migrate to fresher lands. Reasons inexplicable to humanity held us in our ancient city, and our doom. And as our once rich and mighty land sank deeper and deeper into the black mire of the sunless jungle, so into the chaos of squalling jungle life sank the people of the city, our race.
Terrific convulsions shook the earth. The nights were lurid with spouting volcanoes that fringed the dark horizons with red pillars. After an earthquake that shook down the outer walls and highest towers of the city and caused the river to run black for days with sun-lethal substance spewed up from subterranean depths, a frightful chemical change became apparent in the waters that we had drunk for millenniums uncountable.
Many died who drank of it, and in those who lived, the drinking wrought change, subtle, gradual, and grisly. In adapting ourselves to the changing conditions, we had sunk far below our original level. But the lethal waters altered our race even more horribly, from generation to more bestial generation. They who had been winged gods became pinioned demons. With all that remained of our ancestors' vast knowledge, distorted and perverted and twisted into ghastly paths. As we had risen higher than mankind might dream, so we sank lower than man's maddest nightmares reach. We died fast by cannibalism and horrible feuds fought out in the murk of the midnight jungle. And at last, among the lichen-grown ruins of their city, only a single shape lurked. A stunted, abhorrent perversion of nature.
Then, for the first time, humans appeared. Dark-skinned, hawk-faced men in copper and leather harness, bearing bows. The warriors of prehistoric Stygia. There were only 50 of them, and they were haggard and gaunt with starvation and prolonged effort, stained and scratched with jungle wandering, with blood-crusted bandages that told of fierce fighting. In their minds was a tale of warfare and defeat and flight before a stronger tribe, which drove them ever southward until they lost themselves in the green ocean of jungle and river.
Exhausted, they lay down among the ruins where red blossoms that bloom but once in a century waved in the full moon, and sleep fell upon them. And as they slept, a hideous shape crept red-eyed from the shadows and performed weird and awful rites about and above each sleeping. The moon hung in the shadowy sky, painting the jungle red and black. Above the sleepers glimmered the crimson blossoms like splashes of blood. Then the moon went down, and the eyes of the necromancer were red jewels set in the ebony of night.
When dawn spread its white veil over the river, there were no men to be seen. Only a hairy winged horror that squatted in the center of a ring of 50 great spotted hyenas that pointed quivering muzzles to the ghastly sky. And then howled like souls in hell.
This is moving too fast. Each vision tripping over the heels of its predecessor. What is confusion of movement? I see a writhing and melting of lights and shadows against a background of black jungle. Appears green stone ruins and murky river.
Hearken, Conan.
Heed our tale.
Men came up the river in long rowboats, with skulls grinning on the prows, or stole stooping through the trees, spear in hand. They fled screaming through the dark from red eyes and slavering hands. Howls of dying men shook the shadows. Stealthy feet padded through the gloom. Vampire eyes blazed redly. There were grisly feasts beneath the moon, across whose red disk a bat-like shadow incessantly swept.
Then around the jungle point and the whitening dawn swept a long galley, thronged with shining ebon figures. And in the bows stood a white-skinned ghost in blue steel. Ugh! These are dreams! I thought I was ensorcelled somewhere out of time. But I see myself treading the boards of the Tigress. I see both this other existence and the dream as one.
You are one with both, Kuna.
But you will not awake yet. There is more.
Hearken.
But how? The vision clarifies. I see a jungle glade. Ingora. Ingora and 19 black spearmen stand, waiting for someone. They wait for me! But I am here, and I am asleep in the jungle. How? Crumb! They scream!
But at what do they shriek in terror, Conan?
Why do they throw away their weapons and race wildly through the jungle?
Flaps its grotesque wings above them. Krama! They run from death itself! I must break free of these visions! For I am Conan! I am back. The lotus writhes above me. My sword. Away from me, foul plant. What's that? A track near that bush. The spoor of a hyena, but larger than I've ever seen. Not a deep track, though. As if it were preparing to... Nagora! Crumb! Nagora! Nagora! No answer. My warrior's tracks lay ahead. Crumb! Nagora! 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 They ran! Single file from something! The visions of the lotus from the winds! Demon! Crumb! There! A blade ahead! This is the blade from the visions! The shields of Nagora's men! They scattered all about! Dropped in! Headlong flight! Their tracks lead deeper into this foul jungle. The tracks wildly overlay each other. Running between these damned trees. A cliff before me. From something's on the edge of the precipice. A great black gorilla. No, it's Nagora. The damn thing's Nagora. Transformed. Stabbed. Some vile sorcery changed you, Nagora. And now you are dead by my sword. I fear so too are the rest of the warriors. At the bottom of this crag, all dead. Below, in limp, distorted attitudes. Crushed limbs and splintered bones where once breathed men of valor. Belit's crew know nothing more than a feast for black flies. The damned ants already make their way over blood-splashed stones to gnaw at the corpses. All dead! If the beast came here, it must have gone to Crumb's eyes! Riley! Crumb! Drunkenly on the rotting wharf. But where is Belit? And her crew? Kramer! Blood splatters the wharf. The ruins. Kramer and steel! From the jungle edge to the riverbank. Among the rotting pillars and along the broken piers they lie. Torn and mangled and half devoured, two travesties of men and footprints. Hyena tracks! Crumb's eyes! All dead! Nyaga ripped in two! No! Belit! 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 Crumb! Dangling from the tigress masthead, sparkling like blood in the gray light! Crumb's eyes! Our body is hung by those damned crimson clots of that necklace from the masts. Crumb and steel! Belit! No!
Thank you for listening to Queen of the Black Coast, a tale of Conan, written by Robert E. Howard, episode 6, starring as Conan was Stevie Farnaby. The narrator was W. Ralph Walters. And by the way, check out the Zombie Astro. Starring as the ancient peoples of Conan's Black Lotus-infused visions are Stephen J. Cohen, Kim Giannopoulos, James Leeper, Paul Mannering, and from Imagination Lane, Gwen Jensen Woodard and Alexa Chipman, and from the Sonic Society, Jack Ward and Shannon Hilche, and Stevie K. Farnaby as the Winged Ape Beast, and Nagora in ape form, Bill Holwick as Nagora, and various warriors of belief.
The Song of Belit, read by Gwendolyn Jensen Woodard.
Music for tonight's episode was provided by Seraphic Monopoly. Thanks, Brian. Stevie Farnaby, and new music provided by Erdenstern. Check him out on the web, as well as my buddies Cantiga. Links are provided in the show notes. The Queen of the Black Coast is an original story written by Robert E. Howard. Adapted for audio, mixed, produced, and directed by Bill Holwick. Please return again soon, Bikrom. This has been a Broken Sea audio production. www.brokensea.com.
Have a good evening, and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwick from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.